We are back, and apropos to what we've been talking about in the first segment, I think at this point we will go to MSNBC and hear from Rachel Maddow, who points out that this is not a normal election, and that Trump is indeed following the path blazed by prior strongmen in different countries.
You say yeah. CBS should lose its license. Why?
Sure. Well, I've never seen anything like it.
The head of the FCC says we would never yank a license.
Really?
Because a politician didn't like his or her coverage.
Well, this isn't a politician. This is nothing. Wait a minute. Now, what we're doing is we're going to subpoena their records in 60 minutes. No, I think 60 minutes, I think it should be taken off the air, frankly.
This comes in the wake of that same candidate, Donald Trump, saying that ABC News should also have its broadcast license revoked. And it comes in the wake of that same candidate saying that this network, MSNBC and NBC News, should have its broadcast license revoked. And it comes on the heels of him saying that the head of Facebook should be put in prison. And it comes on the heels of him saying, just you wait to see what he's going to do to the New York Times. Wait until you see what I'm going to do to them. This is not normal American stuff. This isn't American at all. This is strongman, authoritarian form of government stuff, which our Constitution protects us from explicitly. I mean, what Trump is proposing to do here in America to the media is what Putin, of course, has already done in Russia. In Russia, it is state-controlled media only, and that's the case everywhere. You've got an authoritarian in charge. In Saudi Arabia, the state-controlled media there includes Al Arabiya TV. You get a handy reminder of the fact that it's state-controlled media if you watch any of their clips online. Trump loves Saudi Arabia, right? One of the many underreported things in the presidential campaign this year, I think, was that in the midst of our presidential campaign just this summer, Trump signed a deal to build Trump Tower Saudi Arabia in Jeddah in Saudi Arabia. That is a huge real estate deal. That is the Saudi government doling out a huge financial favor to Trump while he is in the middle of his presidential campaign. They are expecting, presumably, that if he does get back into the White House, that huge personal financial favor they just did him will still be fresh in his mind when it comes to making American policy, American government policy towards Saudi Arabia. The Saudi royal family, you will recall, also stuffed $2 billion, billion with a B, $2 billion into the pockets of Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, as soon as he left the White House. The New York Times recently reporting that the Saudis have seen precisely zero return on that supposed investment in Jared Kushner. He's just kept all the money and skimmed out over $100 million in fees for himself while returning nothing to them, at least so far. But presumably that's because they're not expecting to be paid back by him. They're expecting to be paid back by the White House, by the American people. The Saudis don't seem to be all that eager to get any of that money back from old Jared because they know they'll get it back another way. From us.
Anyway, you have to laugh. The Saudis loan Jared Kushner $2 billion and have no return to show for it yet. And as far as losing the license of CBS, 60 Minutes, ABC, NBC, MSNBC, putting Mark Zuckerberg in jail, dealing with the New York Times, doesn't that sound like what we were just talking about? The fascist approach? And commenting on all of this in the wake of the rather notorious meeting Trump just held at Madison Square Garden, Stephen Jay Harper has the following to say about, well, what do you know, the comparisons between Trump and the fascist regime of Adolf Hitler. Said Stephen Harper, Trump's rally versus Hitler's Reich. If Trump regains the presidency, he's told everyone what he'll do with it. Take him at his word. Harper notes, lies start at the heart of Trump's sales pitch. He rode to the White House on the wings of his birther lie about President Barack Obama. And his lies at Madison Square Garden flowed so quickly that fact-checkers couldn't keep up. And his media echo chambers keep repeating his lies over and over and over again until they stick. Describing the Nazi method, Adolf Hitler said, At a given sign, it unleashes a veritable barrage of lies and slanders against whatever adversaries seem most dangerous until the nerves of the attacked persons break down. This is a tactic based on precise calculation of human weaknesses, and its results will lead to success with almost mathematical certainty. That was William L. Shirer quoting Adolf Hitler. Notes Harper, immigrants are Trump's centerpiece lie. Trump and J.D. Vance portray immigrants as subhuman. In their fantasy world, immigrants are responsible for everything that ails American voters. Inflation, high prices, exorbitant rents, housing shortages, crime, everything. They lie to feed that narrative. Trump refers to immigrants as, quote, vermin, unquote, who are, quote, poisoning the blood, unquote, of the country. He says falsely that millions of them are criminals from prisons, mental institutions, and insane asylums. In the Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, William Shirer also quoted Hitler as saying from Mein Kampf that he was repelled by the conglomeration of races, repelled by this whole mixture of Czechs, Poles, Hungarians, Ruthenians, Serbs, and Croats, and everywhere the eternal mushroom of humanity, Jews and more Jews. Harper notes that the whole enemy from within concept of Trump has precedence. Trump said, we're running against something far bigger than Joe or Kamala. He refuses to pronounce her name correctly. And far more powerful than them, which is a massive, vicious, crooked, radical left machine that runs today's Democrat Party. Trump told the Madison Square Garden crowd, singling out Representative Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff, they've done very bad things to this country, and they are indeed the enemy from within. Said Harper, in fact, their only crime was to disagree with and criticize Trump publicly. And again, let's go to Hitler as quoted by William Shirer. Hitler, I will know neither rest nor peace till the November criminals, who, he falsely acclaimed, had stabbed Germany in the back with the onerous Versailles Treaty, had been overthrown. And indeed, Hitler banished or executed those who crossed him and surrounded himself with sycophants. And I'm jumping ahead to Trump's role models. Trump praises authoritarian leaders of other countries, including Vladimir Putin, Viktor Orban, Kim Jong-un, and Xi Jinping. His longest-serving chief of staff and retired four-star general John Kelly reported Trump's statements to him that Hitler did some good things and that Trump wanted generals who gave the kind of deference that Hitler's generals gave him. According to Kelly, Trump meets the definition of a fascist. As we said in the first segment, Trump's former chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Mark Milley, said Trump is a fascist to the core and the most dangerous person to the country. And it should be noted that more than 100 other former top Trump advisors agree. Harper notes that Hitler's professor described him as lacking self-control, to say the least. He was considered argumentative, autocratic, self-opinionated, and bad-tempered, and unable to submit to school discipline. I guess the difference between Hitler and Trump is that Hitler was never sent off to a military academy to get him to behave better. Of course, the corollary to that is that Hitler's dad did not arrange for a doctor to claim that he had bone spurs. He, in fact, served in World War I and was awarded medals on a couple of occasions. Of course, Trump, in his opinion, avoided the combat of Vietnam in his own way by failing to get VD. All right, let's go back in and hear what some other people have to say about Donald Trump, starting with the esteemed Judd Michael Luttig.
In voting for Vice President Harris, I assume that her public policy views are vastly different from my own. But I am indifferent in this election as to her policy views on any other issues than America's democracy, the Constitution, and the rule of law, as I believe all Americans should be. In the 2024 election for President of the United States, there are no more important issues for America, end quote. Joining me now is J. Michael Luttig. He has previously served on the United States Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit. He is one of the most respected legal minds in this nation. That's why days before January 6, 2021, the then Vice President Mike Pence sought his advice about what the Constitution says about the certification of the Electoral College votes, advice that helped the country avoid a constitutional crisis. Judge Luttig, thank you for being back on the show this morning.
Thank you, Ali. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Sir, you believe that the choice in the presidential race is clear, that Kamala Harris is fit for office. Donald Trump is not fit for office. Apparently, this is not clear to many Americans because the race shows a deadlock, according to the polls. So this is the last 10 days to convince people of what the issue is. Tell me what your best argument is right now.
Allie, I hope that Americans come to their senses over the course of the next 10 days and understand just what is at stake in this upcoming election, and that is America's democracy and the rule of law. Nothing more, but nothing less. The various policy positions, sundry policy positions that separate the two candidates in this election is of comparatively little significance to their respective views on American democracy and the rule of law. Allie, our democracy and rule of law are the constitutional pillars, the cornerstones of our constitutional republic. It's our democracy and the rule of law that have made America the envy of the world for almost 250 years. Donald Trump, over the past 4 years, beginning on January 6, 2021, has corrupted America's democracy and rule of law. The other two fundamental tenets of our Constitution and of our republic are the willingness of presidential aspirants to accept the will of the American people when they vote on Election Day this year in 10 days. The other fundamental tenet is that every presidential candidate, every candidate for the office of the presidency must pledge to a peaceful transfer of power. Without the acceptance by the candidates of the will of the American people and their pledge to a peaceful transfer of power, America would have no democracy.
And I do want to inject at this point, before we do that, that the things that continue to amaze me the most about Donald Trump is the fact that he killed something like 400,000 Americans from COVID. Now, that's based on the fact that if you compare the United States to the UK or Canada, we had something like 40% more fatalities than those other nations, which did not follow Trump's recommendations on how to deal with the pandemic. 1.1 million people died. If 40% of those were excess deaths, we're talking about 400,000 Americans, which is more people than Hitler and the Nazis and the Axis powers managed to kill in World War II. Think about that. I think that Luttig quote just says so much. Luttig is not a progressive. He's not a Democrat. He does not agree with the policies of Kamala Harris, but he just said, hey, right now, that is of secondary importance. And of course, he's absolutely right. But let us return to the two themes we opened this show up with. The question of Trump being unhinged and the question of fascism. Ben Mycelis took a look at what Trump's been saying lately, and what do you know? Both the topics float to the top. Yes, you have to like that. According to Donald Trump, Kamala Harris uses the F word. We use the F word, too, in this context of today's program, only we're referring to fascism. And by the way, something we don't have enough time to go into for today's program, sadly, is the fact that it's pretty clear, according to intelligence sources, that there are efforts underway to influence this election, efforts from overseas, just as there were in prior elections. There's a rather unsatisfying article in The New Yorker about this very topic, about how U.S. spies are sounding the alarm about election interference, but are being so coy about it and so non-alarmist about it that not a lot of information has been getting out. But we do know that apparently Iran and Putin's Russia, and the Chinese have been, shall we say, doing a few things. I do want to pull a quote or two from this piece because I have some otherwise intelligent friends who believe that there's nothing to Russiagate. Anyway, according to this piece by David D. Kirkpatrick, who is a staff writer at The New Yorker, quote, ever since July 28, 2016, when the director of the CIA began briefing President Barack Obama on the Kremlin's plot to help elect Donald Trump, it has been agonizingly clear that government alarms about hidden meddling by foreign hands might themselves be perceived as tainting the electoral process. Obama decided not to alert the public before Election Day about the full extent of the Russian conspiracy to assist Trump, fearing that such a disclosure would look like a thumb on the scale in favor of Trump's opponent, Hillary Clinton, and potentially undermine her widely expected victory. That, it turned out, was the wrong worry. When the Kremlin brazenly pulled off another hack and leak operation the next year in Europe, France's response provided an instructive contrast. The Russians had stolen gigabytes of emails and other data from the presidential campaign of Emmanuel Macron. But before the day of the vote, credibly nonpartisan government agencies informed citizens of a foreign cyber attack. An electoral commission instructed news organizations not to report on the leaked material. David Salvo, the director of the Alliance for Securing Democracy at the German Marshall Fund, told me the French government's action and the public's trusting response was the best-case scenario. U.S. intelligence agencies, though, waited until 2 months after Trump won the 2016 election to lay out the sweeping scale of the Russian operation. Instead of averting a partisan battle, the delay ignited one. Democrats argued that the Kremlin's support rendered Trump an illegitimate leader. Trump and his allies claimed that the intelligence agencies were part of a deep state conspiracy against him. 7 years later, the fight continues. Now, the piece does go on to mention later on that the Justice Department has charged a pair of Russian nationals, both employees of the state-run RT network, with covertly funding $10 million to a Nashville-based Tenet Media to produce Kremlin-friendly content. Most of that cash allegedly went to Tenet's stable of hardcore MAGA influencers, including YouTube stars Benny Johnson and Tim Pool. To the question of whether we should be worried about this, Tom Nichols, writing in The Atlantic, said yes, because this is likely only the tip of the iceberg. The Justice Department noted that the Kremlin-linked propaganda outfit had identified 2,800 online influencers as potential mouthpieces for Moscow. We have a social media grifter class filled with easy targets for foreign recruitment, and a big slice of the American public that's eager to lap up wild conspiracies and tune out legitimate news. The Russians have scads of money to exploit this weakness in our democracy, and plenty of Americans are despicable enough to take their cash. Writing about this in The Intercept, James Risen notes that U.S. intelligence officials have told Congress that Putin wants to help Trump win again. And if Trump wins, he will do Putin's billing by selling out Ukraine and NATO. Trump is bitter at Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky because he refused to buckle under pressure from Trump in 2019 to fabricate a damaging investigation of Joe Biden and his son Hunter, and thus helped Trump's political fortunes. When Trump's scheme was uncovered, he was impeached by the House. But right-wing hatred of Ukraine runs even deeper than Trump's personal grievances. Risen notes that Christian nationalists love Putin. They see him as their fundamentalist ally in a global culture war against the liberal West. They hate Ukraine because they see it as allied with liberal Western Europe. Christian nationalists want Putin to win the war and to crush Ukraine. They also want the U.S. to withdraw from NATO and end American support for a, quote, woke, unquote, Western Europe. Risen notes that Trump is likely to go along with Putin and the Christian nationalists. Risen also notes that Christian nationalists are also ardent supporters of Israel's right-wing leader Benjamin Netanyahu, and so Trump would give Israel a green light to conduct an even more brutal military campaign in Gaza, southern Lebanon, and the West Bank. Risen notes that Trump would be happy to watch Israel crush the Palestinian people. He doesn't support the creation of a Palestinian state, while his MAGA Republican supporters in Congress have already proposed banning Palestinians from entering the U.S. and demanding the deportation of Palestinian passport holders already living here. That sounds far-fetched, doesn't it, until you realize that Trump banned people from Muslim countries entering the United States, at least for a while. That already happened. All right, in terms of things that have not yet happened but might seem far-fetched, but if you think about it, are really not far-fetched, is what's going to happen on Election Day? As mentioned, we're not optimistic there will be a definitive answer immediately. But if, and it's a big if, Kamala Harris wins this election, and of course the future of the American democracy depends on that, well then the Trump team is going to have to switch to Plan B, which is going to be to gum up the works. On December 11th, I believe it is, when the state governments get together to certify the results of the election and then choose the electors that actually go to cast the votes, well, I think we can expect trouble. That's all I can say. A friend of mine just got back from Europe where he was talking to people about the American election, including a lot of Trump fans, and he wound up asking them, are you really going to take up arms to shoot Democrats if necessary? He was pretty sure, of course, that no such thing would ever happen. I'm less sure of that. Now, one of the issues we have not talked about in this program, or we're out of time and won't be able to do it, is what about the House and the Senate? There's a possibility by flipping 4 or 5 seats that the House could go to the Democrats, at which point Mike Johnson would no longer be Speaker of the House. There's a widespread expectation the Republicans will pick up enough seats in the Senate to take control of that body. But the real action takes place in the House. Let's assume the worst-case scenario. The Republicans are still in charge. Mike Johnson's still the Speaker. At the Madison Square Garden talk, Trump kind of winked and told everybody that, well, he and Mike may have a little plan, a little secret plan that he'll tell us about after the election. Ben Mycelis weighed in on what this might be and pulled up a clip from Congressman Dan Goldman weighing in on that issue.
Donald Trump hinted yesterday in his speech that he has some secret with Speaker Mike Johnson. Now, you wonder, why did Donald Trump come to New York 9 days before the election? This state is going to go to Kamala Harris. And the answer is that the House really runs through New York. There are 7 races that could go either way in the House, and that will likely determine the majority. And make no mistake, the House, we get sworn in on January 3rd. On January 6th, the certification of the Electoral College will happen again, and as we know from 2021. Whoever is in control of the House, of Congress, will be able to have a lot of say on what happens on January 6th. And I suspect, we don't know, but I suspect Donald Trump's little secret plan with Mike Johnson is a backup plan for when he loses and he tries to go to the House of Representatives to throw out the Electoral College, the certification from the states, and have the House of Representatives under the leadership and the control and the gavel for Mike Johnson and try to overturn this election.
Now, assuming that Kamala Harris does get 270 electoral votes and the Republicans are determined to prevent the certification of the fact that she did, well, it's a repeat of what they tried in 2020. Challenge the votes in states, have alternative electors lined up, blah, 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 blah. But the punchline to all this is if you can prevent someone from being certified as the president, then you have what's called a contingent election, according to the United States Constitution, wherein the states vote and each state gets one vote, which pretty much guarantees, since there are more red states than blue, that Donald Trump will get in the back door that way. Mycelis offered the opinion, well, maybe Mike Johnson will not convene Congress to do these duties. And if that happens, what's to stop Mike Pence from putting Mike Johnson under arrest and finding out who's the next in line to gavel in these proceedings? We hope none of that happens. Well, if that happens, what's to stop Joe Biden from stepping in and finding out who the next person in line behind Mike Johnson is and putting him in charge to gavel in the proceedings? You know, the Supreme Court's given the president a lot of latitude, apparently, in official duties, and he might be able to get away with it. We hope none of that happens. And we hope, for God's sakes, all the effort we've made in the past few weeks and months to explain why it is Donald Trump should not be returned to the White House was something that maybe in some way helped. Now, there are some minority opinions out there that are saying that, you know, this is all a bunch of nonsense. Harris is going to win, and she's going to win big. At any rate, we're certainly hoping that that's what happens. And what's happening now is that we are out of time in our final pre-election show, which was produced by Edward McMillan. I'm Douglas Everett. This has been Radio Parallax. Buckle your safety belt. It's going to be a bumpy ride.